After more than 20 years outside every Blues home game, St. Louis Game Time is bringing the coverage to you. It's almost always never easy, but this is Game Time AM with Brad Lee and Jeff Jones on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
Good morning, St. Louis. It's Tuesday. It's not Monday. I don't know what to do with myself. You are listening to Game Time AM here on 590 The Fan, KFNS, 105.7 HD2, and streaming live on InsideSTL.com. I'm Jeff Jones. Matt Davis is here pushing buttons across the board. Brad is out again this morning. Matthew, good morning, sir.
Good morning, Jeff.
How was your holiday weekend? Was it? I don't know.
It was kind of too long.
Yeah?
Actually, yeah, for the first time in my life, I felt like it was a little too long.
Ready to maybe step out of the house a little bit, a little too much baby time?
Yeah, there was a lot of baby time, a lot of sun time, I was like, I think I'm ready to go back to work time.
Yeah, you know, that was the advantage, I guess, to having no one that lives with me and not having really any real responsibilities outside of, you know, working and being here, I guess, is that I can do, I don't know, whatever I want. I had almost no outside time at all. It was embarrassingly, like, you know, lazy weekend where I just sort of, I don't know, sat inside, worked a little. I did clean my apartment top to bottom. I did a bunch of laundry. I don't know. That was pretty much it. But yeah, after a while, honestly, too many days in a row is no bueno, I guess, as the kids say.
Oh yeah.
So, while we were gone, lots and lots of stuff going on over the weekend for sure, starting with last night. Stanley Cup final start last night. Pittsburgh Penguins with a 5-3 victory over Nashville in Pittsburgh. Nashville had won the first game on the road in each of the previous three series so far in these playoffs, so that's a change. And the game last night got off to a pretty interesting start. P.K. Subban appears to score early in the first period. Somehow, there is an offside review that conclusively determines that Philip Forsberg is across the line. Matt, did you see that last night? See that review?
No, I didn't, Jeff, but I will say without knowing what the picture looked like.
Yeah.
I hate the offside reviews.
I think that's
resulting
pretty,
in a lost goal.
I think that's pretty universal. And in fact, I know that Gary Bettman had his State of the League press conference yesterday, which we'll talk about here a little bit later. And that was asked about the offside review. And he said, They're here to stay. He's committed to the offside review, which is a shame considering that the first goal, or the first potential goal of the Cup Finals at least, was waved off thanks to an offside review just several hours later. So yeah, so the puck gets to Forsberg on the half wall. He apparently is offside by what appeared to be a zoomed in millimeter. Yeah. And that results in the no goal.
Wow.
The Penguins then fire in three in the first period and get off to a 3-0 lead. Well, the Penguins fire in two in the third, deflects off Rene, deflects off Matthias Ekholm's knee, and then rebounds back into the net. And the Penguins take a 3-0 lead into the second period of the first game of the Cup Finals. And already for Predators fans, you're thinking, man, you know, you wait again. The long suffering Nashville Predators, you wait so long. You wait so long to get there. You get to the finals, and it goes just about as poorly as you could have imagined there in the first period. In the second period, however, the turning point. And Matt, do you know what the turning point was?
No, what was the turning point?
The catfish.
Oh my!
Someone threw a catfish. There were signs throughout the weekend from the fish market in Pittsburgh, in fact, which said they would not sell whole catfish.
Yeah.
To Predators fans,
I saw that
you had to produce an identification in order to buy a catfish. Apparently, but it appeared as though the gentleman who threw in the catfish, number one, I believe may have altered the catfish in such a way that it was designed to explode upon impact. I'm not a fisherman, but I guess you can probably.
What would you have to do to make a fish explode?
Well, I imagine, you know, if you cut it in the right way. Well, yeah, if it was sitting out for a while, because it didn't get thrown until, you know, partway into the second period. So clearly,
right,
this fish was wrapped to someone's body for a good couple hours and then sort of snuck into the game.
Wow.
I assume that's how you do that, right? You would have to.
I wouldn't know. I've never had the thought cross my mind to, hey, I'm going to take a catfish into the stadium with me?
Well, if you know how to sneak a catfish into a professional hockey game,
just about anything,
you should go ahead and text in, call in, and it's 855-282-8255, 855-282-8255. Those are the numbers for both calling and texting. If you have catfish sneaking experience, yeah, as far as I can tell, the way to do it, I guess, would be to hold it against your body and then saran wrap yourself.
I would prefer not to.
I would also prefer. I guess you could lay
it. This seems like a lot of trouble too.
It does, but if you're committed to bringing the team back, I don't know. Well, and it appeared that perhaps it was a radio station. Like there was a radio guy.
Oh, okay.
He had a t-shirt on from a radio station down there in Nashville, and I believe the fish may have had a bumper sticker attached to it.
Okay, so it's just a little free marketing.
Yeah, right, little promo, so I don't think the guy really cost himself a bunch of money.
Did he get scooped up and escorted on out?
He did. The fish and the guy both were escorted from the arena. Pretty funny, actually, to watch the Penguins staff there, basically, you know. Well, number one, to watch them try to scoop up all of the little pieces of catfish.
Ew.
That, yeah, it wasn't that.
Well, so you know that ice surface was smelly there.
I would think, you know, I'm familiar with hockey smell. I understand that it's not the favorite smell of many people.
It's not exploding fish smell.
It is not, right. It is way better, to me at least, to my nasal passages, far less offensive than exploding fish smell.
So what's the origins of this catfish dilemma?
I do not know. As far as I know, it started either this year, maybe in the playoffs this year. I'm not entirely sure when they got going, but
I assume
it has to do with the just the southern roots down there, right? I know that, you know, everyone loves a good fried catfish. Yeah. I don't know. I've been to the.
I think that's the only thing you can really kind of say. This might be the reason, because otherwise it's like, no, I have no clue.
I don't know. I mean, I've been to the Paula Deen Buffet in Tunica, Mississippi.
Oh, yeah?
So I bet
that was good.
It was okay. I mean, it was a casino buffet, and she had branded it right. So all things considered, it was a casino buffet. But you know, the food was pretty good.
Yeah.
Apparently, by the way, as I Google, Predators fans have been throwing catfish onto the ice since 2003, just as a good luck charm. So I'm guessing they probably stole it from the Wings, because the Wings used to throw the octopus and whatnot.
But they're not allowed to do that anymore, right?
Oh, they do in the playoffs, though.
They do?
Oh, yeah. They're, and
I
in
guess
fact,
we wouldn't know this past season.
Right. We would have missed it. But, yeah, the gentleman who runs their ice plant, who's their facilities guy, is I don't know, partially famous, I guess, for running down. He scoops up the octopus once it's thrown and waves it around his head like a rally towel.
I was under the impression that they were not allowed to do that, that it was outlawed something 10, 15 years ago, something like that.
Well,
and that it was said, you throw octopi, whatever it is, on the ice, you are in trouble.
Well, I'm sure if you throw the octopus, you are probably being ejected from the game. Maybe you face charges, I guess, probably, right? Some kind of reckless endangerment charge. You don't like the throwing, or you don't like the charges?
I don't like the charges.
Okay.
They've been doing that forever. As far as I know, nobody's ever been injured by the octopus on the ice. So
I think the challenge would be in writing a rule or regulation that included an octopus but excluded other items which may be dangerous.
Yeah.
And so
like catfish?
Like cat. Look, a catfish is it's a hefty piece of fish. I think they have some sharp corners, right? The whiskers are a little pointy. They have scales.
There was a Tennessee Titans player at one of the Predators games that they thought cut himself on a catfish.
I believe Taylor Lewan, the offensive lineman. Yeah, because the Predators are the Titans rather offensive line has been visible at the Predators games for sure.
Mm-hmm. They ended up coming out and saying that it was he cut himself on his beer.
Oh,
which I'm assuming was one of them tall boys that they were on television chugging.
They were in fact slamming the beers down, ripping the shirts off, swinging them around. You know, look, if you're going to have an offensive line, you may as well have them participate that way. Right. I thought it was interesting that
if your hockey team's not popular enough, bring in the football team,
right?
And then get some exposure.
Yeah, get the little buffer there. I thought it was interesting that that Ben Roethlisberger came out to wave the terrible towel last night to kick off the Stanley Cup Finals.
Oh, wow.
I'm of two minds on that. Number one, you know, obviously it's cool for fans in Pittsburgh who love the Steelers and who are into it. And, you know, I understand wanting to appeal to a broader audience.
Of
course. Look, there's football players The other two things in my brain, though, number one, my please like my sport part of my brain makes me feel like, what do we need football players for? Like, just let the hockey be the hockey.
Oh, a little, right? Jealousy.
Yeah, I mean, right, yeah. Okay. Like, a little bit.
That's fair. I can understand
a little
that.
Bit of little brother syndrome. The other one is Ben Roethlisberger? Really? Right?
Like, Big Ben.
Well, but everyone just pretends like Ben Roethlisberger hasn't been accused of, right, some pretty heinous stuff.
He's a good role model now.
Yeah, the other stuff just sort of goes away. And I don't love that necessarily.
No, not at all.
Right? Like, there's a lot of what the kids call problematic things about hero worshiping a guy like Ben Roethlisberger. So yeah, I don't know.
It was largely kind of glossed over too, so that it became easy to forget. More or less.
That was, yeah, you know, for folks, I guess, who don't know what we're talking about, there were allegations a number of years back that Roethlisberger had sexually assaulted some folks, I guess, in a bar in Pittsburgh.
Right. You said folks. So I believe there was
more than one accusation, if I remember correctly. And again, mm-hmm, accusations being what they are, there's no way to know, I guess, what happened there. But at the same time, it is less than exciting to see that.
Who else could they have gone with? Maybe Le'Veon Bell?
Yeah, I don't know.
He's kind of been in trouble. He's been suspended a few times.
Yeah,
so
but
also
for
not a
but
great role
for
model,
weed,
maybe.
Right? I mean, that's a very different.
Oh, danger!
Very
weed.
Different situation.
It's a bad weed. Yeah. It is.
Yep. Phone's ringing there, so Matt's going to go ahead and grab it. If you want to get in on the phone, that is 855-282-8255. Apparently the phone was and there it goes. So yeah, the Penguins hop out to that 3-0 lead last night. Catfish flies. And then the game turns. We'll get to that in a second, though, because we're going to go to the phones right now. Matt, who do we have?
We have Joe.
Hi, Joe. Good morning, sir.
How you guys doing?
Not bad. How are you?
Good. I wanted a couple things in the game last night. First of all, you know, let me just say this. Mike Emmerich, he is one of the best broadcasters, play-by-play guys I have ever heard. He is outstanding.
Yes, sir.
The great late Dan Kelly was, I thought, the best, but Mike Emmerich, outstanding what he does. Certainly makes the game exciting the way he broadcasts it. I thought Nashville got screwed. I just turned you guys on. I'm looking at that offsides call. To me, it's got to be indisputable evidence. Did you see it?
No, yeah. I saw the play in live action and then watched the replay, and obviously have since looked at it online and looked at the screenshots. Yeah, it's really hard to call that indisputable evidence. Now, yeah. I guess there's a possibility that the league has access to, you know, because the angle they kept showing on TV and the angle that I've shown on Twitter is sort of a raised camera, kind of from above the bench. I know that for the most part, in all rinks now, there are cameras actually inside the boards directly on the blue line, so it is possible the league had access to an angle that the TV broadcast didn't. But if that's the case, you would think they would make it available, right? You would want to settle down all those questions.
Yes, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, because they kept showing them, like, okay, I mean, so, you know, so to me, you go with the call on the ice, which was a goal.
Right.
I mean, so especially in a, you know, Stanley Cup, you take a goal away. The game itself, though, I've never seen anything like it before. I mean, you know, Pittsburgh goes 37 minutes without a shot.
Yep.
They have 12 shots for the game. Nashville, to their credit, you know, you're down 3-0 on the road and you come back. I mean, so I get, but to me, that's a game where Nashville, you know, you got to win that game. You steal one on the road. I don't think it bodes well for them for the rest of the series. I got to think Pittsburgh's not going to come out in game two and have 12 shots on goal. Do you? I mean, I think that's going
to
happen.
It's interesting to me because I think it cuts both ways, because part of me thinks, okay, look, you went down 3-0 on the road and you managed to come back and tie the game. That is, that's impressive. That's a feat they can build off of. But the other end of me says, okay, but they lost that game. So does it display that, you know, maybe the Penguins are more able to deal with the stress and the adversity that comes with a cup final than the Predators are, right? Like, maybe the Penguins can, obviously having not played their best game, they still managed to find a way to win. So is that an indication of a team that's more prepared for this than the Predators are? I mean, I think it's fair to ask. And it would be hard for them not to be. A huge percentage of this Penguins team returned from last year's Stanley Cup champion team, and so they've been there before. They know what to do when the chips get down.
To Pittsburgh's credit, though, I mean, the loss of Chris Letang, though, he's one of the top defensemen in the league.
And yeah, it's huge.
They've done this without him. As far as Nashville, one thing about Nashville, though, and this is something the Blues, and not just the Blues, we're Blues fans here, but Nashville is such a tenacious checking team. You watch them, watch how they play. And you know what, checking is about effort.
Right.
It isn't about talent. It's about effort. And they just not last night. I mean, they were just this whole playoffs. They to a man. They're just constantly all over their ice, playing their man, checking, and that's something that teams could learn from, especially the Blues when you get to the playoffs. That's how you play the game.
Yep. Thanks, Joe. I appreciate you calling in. Yeah. The tenacity in that Nashville team is impressive. And it does again. It creates frustration. I know we've talked about this before here on the show. With a guy like Patrick Berglund, for example, he's never going to be that guy. Patrick Berglund has one speed. He goes 45 miles an hour,
yeah,
no matter what he's doing or what time of the ice it is, and that doesn't change for the playoffs either. So it's definitely frustrating to watch a guy like Colton Sissons, for example. How many Blues fans right now would trade Patrick Berglund straight up for Colton Sissons? And it's a silly card. I mean, because Berglund is obviously a more skilled player. Sissons is a fourth line kind of center, but he's got 6 goals in these playoffs because he has been generating effort and getting himself to the net. I mean,
yeah.
It's crazy the way in which you see that change. Austin Watson, who was among the league leaders in fighting majors during the regular season, so not a guy who you're relying on for a lot of offense, digs the puck out on the forecheck at the end of a penalty kill in that third period to get it out to Freddie Gaudreau for his first NHL goal to tie the game. I mean, it's these little pieces of effort that you see people engaging in, and then, I don't know, you watch Blues games, and part of you just goes, would you try harder? Try harder, mm-hmm. please. Right?
I just can't wait to sit here and talk about Patrick Berglund for the next 5 years.
Well,
yeah.
Years and years, Matt. Patrick Berglund is not going anywhere.
Oh, and
anywhere.
When they raise his banner to the rafters.
And they will when he becomes the
it's going to be celebrated.
The Blues player with the longest time playing with the franchise.
That can't happen, right? They can't let that happen.
It can happen.
That will just make me sad for a while.
It is likely to happen with the extension that he has signed. I know we talked about it when he signed it. He could miss an entire season and then some games and still play the most
that
games.
That much?
Yeah, I believe the number is something like, of the games that are scheduled under this contract that he has signed, he can miss like 96 games and still end as the franchise's all-time
leader. That's more than he's
in
missed
games
in his
played.
Entire career so far, isn't it?
Pretty close. I think he had 1 year. Well, he had this year where he had the shoulder injury where he missed some time, and then he's had that kind of stuff off and on. I think he's pretty reliably good for 75 or so games a season. He's going to miss a handful, but I think you can probably count on some Patrick Berglund.
I'm going to hope that maybe we get a new GM somewhere here within the next couple of years, and one of his first tasks is going to be, all right, I'm going to unload Patrick Berglund.
Well,
that's what I'm hoping for. That's the only thing I have to look forward to.
And I admire the fact that you're willing to look forward to that, and I admire I admire
I don't have
your
a choice,
vision,
Jeff.
But right. I don't know that I would necessarily hang my hat on that possibility. I'm gonna turn this around for you, by the way, Matthew. There's the
computer screen.
There's the catfish.
Oh.
Yeah, and there's the inside of the catfish as thrown on.
Yeah, there was definitely some adjustments made.
Yeah,
to that
there were
fish.
Some. Yeah, there were some cuts made designed to make it explode. It
looks gross.
Yes. So as caller Joe pointed out, yes, indeed, after the Penguins hop up to that 3-0 lead, they do not get a shot in the entirety of the second period. How many times has that happened since the NHL
Pittsburgh
started tracking?
Pittsburgh
did not have a shot on goal in the entire second period.
I didn't think that was possible.
Since the NHL started tracking shots on goal in 1956, that has never happened in the Stanley Cup final.
Okay.
That a team had 0 shots in a period. So
what happened? They just felt a little too comfortable up 3-0.
Nashville ratcheted up the pressure. And the other thing that you saw is it ended up having less of an effect on the game because the game ends and both teams have 3 minor penalties. But the Penguins did score that first goal on a 5-on-3. Nashville takes 2 penalties simultaneously, sort of immediately after that first goal so the first goal is waved off. Nashville ends up in the 5-on-3 immediately after that. Malkin scores. Pittsburgh scores quickly after that. And then finally there's the own goal at the end of the first period. And so basically three goals, I think, in 441 was the number there in the first period. So it ends up getting the Predators down kind of in a hurry. But once the once they fired back at it, and you know, the Predators get themselves on the power play, they get a little bit of control back in the game. Ryan Ellis scores a goal there in the second period because Ryan Ellis, of course, always scores a goal, and you know, and turns the momentum. The Penguins went 37 minutes without a shot on goal. 37, wow. More than half of the game with no shot
and
on
won
goal.
The game.
And their first shot at the conclusion of that 37-minute gap was Jake Guentzel's shot, which gave them the game-winning goal in the third period, was Guentzel's 10th of the playoffs. And Jake Guentzel, and by the way, who has 10 goals in these playoffs, was very nearly a healthy scratch in this game, in game one of the Stanley Cup Finals.
Oh, wow.
You know, there were quotes I saw from Mike Sullivan, the coach of the Penguins, suggesting that Guentzel appeared to be wearing down toward the end of the last round. You know, he's a rookie, only played half the season up with the Penguins, but he's been a point-per-game player since the recall. He has 10 goals in the playoffs. It is unbelievable the way that the Penguins are able to just find guys in the draft and in the AHL who can come up and play on Crosby's wing and just pour in goal after goal after point after point. And so Jake Guentzel is the most recent of those folks.
So what do you think is leading to Ryan Ellis's success this postseason? Because he's eclipsed his career total in points for playoffs with this. He's got 12 points in 17 games played so far.
You know, he has been an effective defenseman pretty much his entire career. What leads to this explosion? I don't know. I mean, part of it is going to be your standard small sample size stuff, right? It's going to be the guy, you know, he just...
Well, for example, he had 6 points last year in 14 playoff games.
Sure.
And they were all assists, no goals. This year, 5 goals, 7 assists. So,
well, part of that, I think, is the benefit from that series against the Blues where he was absolutely on fire.
Yes.
And, you know, the Blues did not do a good job at all of containing the offense from the National defense, which gave him more opportunities to put the puck in the net, frankly.
Okay.
And then, you know, yeah, then they've been funneling the offense through the defense more often. I think that Nashville is well aware that their forward lines don't exactly have the firepower that they need, right? I mean, you look at the guys that were dressing last night for Nashville.
Yeah.
You get past Philip Forsberg, and there's not a lot there. I mean, they were the Predators fans were celebrating the return of Mike Fisher and Craig Smith last night. Mike Fisher had his first point of the playoffs last night. We're not talking about a guy who is piling the points in. Did not have a point in the playoffs before an assist last night. That's the captain of the team, by the way. So for a guy like Ellis, the opportunities are just they're just there now. They might not have been there before, and it gives Ellis an opportunity to emerge, I guess, more than anything else. You are listening to Game Time AM here on 590 The Fan, KFNS 105.7 HD2, streaming live on InsideSTL.com. We've been breaking down Game 1 of the Stanley Cup Final. If you missed any of it, feel free to podcast later. Podcast is available online. It's available at InsideSTL.com, on iTunes, on the Google Play Store, I don't know, SoundCloud, whatever, wherever you get your podcasts, we'll be there and we'll be willing and ready to listen to you, to talk to you, I guess, is the thing that I was trying to say, at any point in the day. If you want to call in, text in, it is 855-282-8255, 855-282-8255.
We just had a long weekend, Memorial Day weekend.
Indeed.
Where are the callers? We should have some callers just ready
to get the week going. I think everyone is either hungover or they've fallen into the time vortex like I did, where now the days no longer have any meaning.
Ah.
That is the other downside of the long weekend.
It's really easy to get sucked into that.
It really is. The days, like the, you know, days turn into nights, turn into days, and the one bleeds into the other, and you don't know what day it is anymore, and then, you know, it's Tuesday, but it feels like Monday, but then it feels like Friday. I don't know. There's a whole pile of mess going on. So over the weekend as well, your St. Louis Cardinals fought so hard, fought so fine, and won one game. Had a nice 1-2 series against the Colorado Rockies, and then lost yesterday to the LA Dodgers. And the Cardinals are a mess right now, Matt Davis. The Cardinals are in rough shape. So I saw yesterday, friend O the show and 590 board op and Periscope all-star Brendan Schaefer tweeted this yesterday afternoon. The Cardinals started the season 3-9. Then they went 18-6 in their next 24 games.
Yeah.
And they've been 3-9 in their last 12.
Well, I think that if you look back, the 18-6 stretch, it's going to show that there was quite a few subpar teams.
Yes.
In that we got a lot of those victories against, and now we're playing, you know, not horrible teams, and we're not much together.
Yeah. After the trip to the Dodgers and into the Rockies and now back to the Dodgers here, it is becoming increasingly apparent that there are some pretty big holes in this team that need plugging. Lots of,
I think, in fairness, it's been apparent.
That's true.
I think
it
a lot of people,
apparent, yes.
It's been somewhat obvious.
Right.
Heading into the season, I didn't talk about it a lot because all these people are all saying, 90 wins, 92 wins, all this stuff. And I'm just kind of sitting back saying, I don't really see it. I would have guessed 80 to 85 wins. So I'm not really.
That would have been where I was at as well.
I'm not really all that surprised by what's happening. By the way, my excitement for Cardinals baseball is a little bit lower this season.
Yeah, pretty low. The catfish texting in.
The catfish?
Well, it says catfish. So okay. we'll call him the catfish texting in to ask who won. Number one, you should know because you were there. But I guess if you're catfish, you were kicked out early. Penguins win. Penguins win 5-3. Gensel with a game-winning goal there at the end of the third period, and then Bonino follows it up with the empty netter. So, yes, indeed, the Pittsburgh Penguins taking a 1-0 lead.
He got escorted out before the end of the game.
He did indeed. So and was pretty worse for wear on the way out. So I guess I understand the concern there for Mr. Catfish. But your Cardinals in rough shape. Lots of roster movement.
Yeah.
Over the weekend, Miguel Sokolovich gets the old big DFA.
He's gone.
He is indeed. Cardinals have 10 days, or I guess at this point, 7 days to either to trade or put him on waivers. I'm sure that the Cardinals want to get him through waivers and get him down to Memphis and keep him around in the organization. I would think he would be likely to clear waivers. I don't really know that a right-handed reliever with an ERA close to 8, who is 30, is a guy that a lot of teams probably have their own version of Sokolovich. Cardinals call up John Brebbia to make his major league debut. If you're wondering why, it's because unless there is an injury, you cannot return a player to the majors unless they've been down at AAA for 10 days. So Sam Tuivalala gets sent down to Memphis about 2 days before Sokolovich gets cut. Cardinals left unable to recall anyone else because, you know, you have John Gantz in the rotation down there. Memphis is already short on starters with Daniel Ponce de Leon out hurt. And so John Brebbia, who was playing for the Long Island Ducks 2 years ago, gets the recall and has pitched 1/3 of an inning and looked great.
What did he do?
He got an out.
Oh, yeah. really good.
He got an out. And when you consider what the right-handed relievers have done in this Cardinals bullpen so far this season, that makes Brebbia top of the heap. We got a call, Matt Davis?
Yes, we do. We have Mark.
All right, Mark, good morning, sir.
Good morning. How are you guys doing this morning?
Not bad. Lovely. About yourself?
That's good. Yeah, you guys just mentioned about the Cardinals, man.
Yes, sir.
I mean, if this was a time for them to be playing good, the Cubs are struggling like I don't know what nobody's business,
right?
Man. And the Cardinals, man, it's just like, you know, when they was on that winning streak, I said, you got to look at who they playing, people. Yeah, people was getting all excited. I said, look who they playing. They ain't playing no quality teams.
Right.
As soon as they play a quality team, you see what happens, man. All those weaknesses are exposed. Every last one of them. Okay.
Yeah.
I just don't think this team is good at all, man. Not at all.
Yeah.
Okay?
I mean, I not at all, I guess, is all relative, right? I don't think it's a playoff team. I think it's it's between a 78 and 83 win team, so 500 team basically, right? So they're a middle of the road team. It's not exciting. It doesn't make for a lot of fun.
You think they can win a wild card?
Can they? Yeah, sure. If I had to bet on it, no, I wouldn't bet on them to do it. I think they can.
If they do, it's going to be because of the other teams in the chase,
right?
Struggle down the stretch and aren't able to, get their place. I think that would be the best option for the Cardinals to make a wild card.
Yeah, and I think that and we're going to get into this here in a little bit. I think that there are some structural issues with the way that this team is being run right now. That I mean, honestly, at some point you have to start asking the question about whether or not the right guys are in charge in the right spot. And, again, it's easy to bag on Matheny all the time. A lot of the stuff that's going on over the weekend doesn't have a lot to do with him. But there are some underlying things about the way the roster is constructed for this team that do have a lot to do with Mike Matheny. There are some things going on with the general manager as well.
Now, what was the deal with them sending Gritches down to the single-A ball, man? What is that all about?
Yeah,
that
so
crazy.
And here's a place where we should be careful to keep this in the right perspective, because obviously it looks bad on paper to send a guy who you were counting on to be a middle-of-the-order hitter to single-A in the last week in May. There are a couple of things about this, though. Number one, the Cardinals said over the weekend, and Mosey locked to this as well, that they know he can hit Triple-A pitching. The question is not whether or not he can hit the ball in Triple-A. The question is whether or not he can translate it to the majors. And so what do you get out of sending him down to Memphis, letting him hit 320 for Memphis and hit a bunch of bombs, and then you call him back up and you got the same guy? The reason that he gets sent to Palm Beach is not because he needs to play an A-ball,
right,
but it's because of where Palm Beach is, right? So extended spring training is still going on down in Jupiter. All the instructors are still there. So you send Gritchick down to Palm Beach because then he has access to the full instructional staff. You give him basically a mental reset. So the way you should look at Gritchick right now is not that he was demoted to A-ball, but that he basically, like, if they had been able to find an injury in Randall Gritchick, they would have disabled him, but he's not injured, and you can't just put non-injured players on the DL. And in fact, I think that MLB is probably cutting down on that. They're being much more strict about that than they have in years past, because there is now the 10-day DL instead of the 15-day DL. So if they weren't being more strict about it, then teams could, for example, like the Cardinals when they skipped Michael Wacha in the rotation over that Cubs series, they could have put him on the DL with a mystery injury and had 10 days, because it was 10 days between starts for him, where they could have brought up and had an extra roster spot, basically, right? And so I think the teams are having to be much more, I guess, much more responsible to the league in terms of documenting injuries than perhaps they have been in the past, which creates a situation where you can't find a phantom muscle pull for Gritchick, and so you send him to A-ball because he needs the reset. He needs the 10 days to get his head right. So it's not that he was demoted to A-ball. It's that he needed time off and time to reset.
Better chance at single-A for instruction, basically.
Yes.
That still don't make any sense. Man, that's what you do in spring training.
It's a horrible situation.
All that stuff's supposed to be done in spring training.
Oh, no, that's totally fair. Like, I'm not saying that it's optimal that you have to send Gritchick down in the middle of the season to go get his head right. That part is
you
a huge red
flag. You can't
leave
him in the lineup where the way he was playing,
and
though.
That's right. That's
so
the other thing.
Kind of forced into.
Right. He's putting up a 640 OPS, and he's got 55 strikeouts. And, you know, he's averaging at this point a strikeout basically every third time he comes to the plate, and that just can't happen.
Well, man, it just—I don't know. This some heads over there needs to roll, man. Because this is ridiculous.
Well,
it makes no sense. The stuff they pulling, man, it makes no sense. You know,
I mean, there's
it really don't.
There are for sure. There are for sure some things on the management side that raise some questions. Matheny gets a lot of the slack, a lot of the criticism for this. And I believe me, I'm first in line when it comes time to bag on Mike Matheny. I think there's conversations that need to be had, number one, about the coaching staff. I don't know how much longer you can deal with Chris Maloney doing whatever the hell he's doing at third base. We'll talk about that here in a little bit as well.
And where is Okendo at, man?
He's in Florida. He's hanging out with Randall Gritchick.
Why is he down there? He should be on third base coaching, man.
Why
is he down there?
Well, because he's not, like, conscripted. I mean, you can't force the guy to come coach third base if he doesn't want to, right? I think at this point, it's clear to Okendo that he's probably never going to be a manager in the big leagues. He interviewed with some teams in the late 2000s, you know, 07, 08, 09.
A couple different off-seasons.
Had interviews in Seattle and in San Diego. And, you know, he had opportunities to be a manager. Didn't get hired. And then, so that's fine. So then he gets into a situation where it's clear that perhaps he's not – maybe he doesn't have the role with Matheny that he had with La Russa, right? He's got the relationships with Yadi, obviously, and with lots of guys that are on the roster. But
I've got a conspiracy theory.
Okay.
If you want to hear it.
Sure.
I think maybe that maybe he had a little too much loyalty from guys in the clubhouse. Maybe he was stepping on some guys' toes a little bit.
You know, so the clubhouse aspect is another thing that I'm
pure speculation.
Right. I've never been in the Cardinals clubhouse, so I would have no way of knowing how things actually are in there. The people that I do know that are in the clubhouse, I don't think they would say that it's not cohesive, but I think that they would say that perhaps it's not optimistic necessarily. I think it's reasonable. Mark, you got anything else going on this morning?
No, that's it, man.
All right, thanks man. Yep, take it easy. Yep. There's a lot of stuff for sure to dig into with the Cardinals this morning, and with Brad out and with No Way to Stop Me, we're gonna go ahead and get into it. Well, there is, however, a text from friend of the show Stephen Walden, as he identifies himself, which I'm gonna start calling him exclusively friend of the show Stephen Walden. Says, read the single A fan theory on Facebook that Grichuk was sent down because A ball pitchers don't throw strikes as consistently. Sending him to A ball would allow him to better discern balls and strikes and learn plate discipline. Legit take, hot take, or stupid? I would not say stupid.
Mm-mm.
I wouldn't say hot take. I would say, I don't know. I truly think the reason that Grichuk was sent to single A was so he gets time with the instructional folks down at the Cardinals complex. In terms of the control stuff, part of that is true, but the other part of it is that a lot of guys in A-ball are throwing fastballs too, right? Those are guys that are just sort of developing their arms and trying to grow. So the issue with Grichuk is not developing pitch recognition on fastballs. It's at not waving at curveballs, right? Like, you mm-hmm. know, he needs, I don't know, more room for Joe Boo or something, right?
If that was the situation, he was sent down because the pitchers have trouble hitting the strike zone or whatever, then you'd just be seeing the same thing down there that he's doing up here, wouldn't
well,
you?
Well, and, you know, and the other part of that is it's the last week of May, and if you have to send him to A-ball to learn balls and strikes, then maybe he's not a very good baseball
player. It should be coming into focus now, and this is my opinion, and I felt this way last season,
sure.
that it's time to look at other options. It's time to figure something out. You can't keep going with this left fielder slash last season center fielder that you're going to have to send down to the minor leagues to adjust things to get his head straight. Once a season, you can't do that. It's time. He's been around for what, three? This is his third season or fourth season with
the
Cardinals,
this is his fourth season with the Cardinals.
Right.
He's 25. I
think it's time to start looking at other options here.
Yeah, and I understand. I really do. Being wrapped up in the talent.
Right.
And that first full season here in 2015, where he plays 103 games, puts up an .877 OPS, hits 17 bombs. The next year, last year, you know, he's up and down for the minors, but still hits 24 home runs. I really do understand falling in love with that kind of talent, but it's just not
I get
not
it, but to me, those numbers show that there's going to be some value on the table for him, perhaps, at this point.
And the question
it's
is...
It's time to go ahead and cash it in, I think.
Right, is now the time to make that move while he still has some of that value? And
well, if you have to take your major league starting left fielder and send him down to single A, I think, yeah, it might be go ahead and time to make the move.
It probably is. Matt, do we have a phone call again?
Yeah, we have Tom on the line.
All right, Tom, good morning, sir.
Hey, guys, how you doing this morning?
Not bad, how about yourself?
Hey, not bad. Hey, I wasn't going to comment about this, but yeah, I wouldn't think that Grichuk has any value right now. I would say zero. So it might be time to move in a different direction. But I'm not sure which guy said it, but earlier, just a couple minutes ago, one of my biggest pet peeves: every time a team's losing, or every time the Cardinals are kind of losing, there's always something going on in the clubhouse.
Sure.
But I don't ever hear anything about it when they're winning.
Right. Because
it just seems like one of those weird deals.
Yeah, I think that, I don't know, you're right that the clubhouse stuff very rarely comes up when a team is winning. It is definitely used as, I don't know, boogeyman, scapegoat, some sort of way to explain away mm-hmm. negative play. And I don't think that there are any, like, I don't think there are any crazy divisions in the clubhouse, right, that are creating these massive problems on the field. But I think that what you do see is when things start to slip and things start to go badly on the field, I think it's an open question as to whether or not there's really much of an ability to sort of, I don't know, rally the troops, right, and sort of regather and refocus and get yourself back into a mental situation where you need to be. I don't know that necessarily you're seeing this team display the kind of resiliency that you would need to see out of a team to really show that they can get through the long grind of a season, because it is a long season. There are lots of ups and downs, and you have to be able to mentally handle that. And part of that mentally being able to handle it is the chemistry stuff and the clubhouse stuff. And however hard it is to quantify, it does affect, I think, the team in the long run. Now, what I think is a totally fair criticism is – you know, if you're not in the clubhouse every day, it's impossible to know how that affects it. And then, like I said, I readily admit, I have never been in the Cardinals clubhouse, so I have no idea what it's like in there on a day-to-day basis, right? So maybe I'm entirely wrong, but I get the impression from folks who would know that, I don't know, there's not disharmony, but there's also not a lot of enthusiasm.
Yeah, it seems to me like the thing with the Cardinals is, plain and simple, Dexter Fowler, I mean, the guy's hitting about 200.
Right.
It's just unbelievable. Piscotty's not doing anything at all. Bridget's not doing anything. I mean, you've got just so many holes. And then when you look at their bullpen, you know, you've got O's been pretty consistent most of the year. Rosenthal, I think's been a pleasant surprise for the most part.
Sure.
But and I think Bowman, was, I don't know how to say it, but I never was that big of a believer in Bowman, even when he was doing great. I think he's a guy that definitely overexposed.
Well, it's definitely easy to see the comparisons between Bowman and Seth Maness, right? I mean, they're right-handed, the younger guys, you throw them in the seventh, all that stuff makes sense. But and the other side of this is Mike goes to them every day, right? Like every day when they're available, you know, you see Bowman all the time. And part of that is a lack of better options, because when you look at the other right-handers in the bullpen, you're looking at Broxton, who's not getting anybody out. You've got Brebbia out there, I guess, and who? I mean, he's not going to get much usage, I think, at all. He might, you know, you're going to see him maybe one or two more times. Sokolovich obviously gets the DFA over the weekend. There's nobody out there, and they're carrying 13 pitchers, and there's nobody out there.
Right. Yeah. The Broxton experiment that needs to be over.
Yeah,
it should have been over a year and a half ago, really.
For sure. And Cecil. I'm not sure really what's going on with him, but I mean, I know he's lefty, but by the same token, there's another guy that's just been
that's part of the problem as well with the pen, is that you have Tyler Lyons out there, who in theory would be your longer relief guy, right? Like if you have to pull a starter in the fourth or the fifth, Lyons is the guy that you want regardless of handedness. But at this point, they're having to reserve him because you can't trust Cecil to get anyone out. And so if there are multiple tough left-handers, and for that matter, you can't really trust Segrist either. So at this point, Lyons is the best left-handed option in the bullpen, so he's getting saved for those spots. Now, he's not being used in those spots, but that's the rationale.
Right. What's going on with Gonzalez? And I think we had another lefty in the minors, but we might have traded him.
Marco Gonzalez, I'm sorry, what was that? Who was the other guy?
Well, I was going to say, not Cooney. I know we did trade him, but wasn't there another lefty that was solid in the minors?
If there is, he's passing my mind as well right now. I mean, Gonzalez definitely is pitching well for Memphis. Really, all of the starters in Memphis are pitching pretty well, and there is opportunity for depth down there. Here's the issue, is that the Cardinals, they have to run the organization as well as the big league team. Now, obviously, the minor league teams exist to feed the big league teams, and if you have to make a sacrifice, you have to make a sacrifice. But with you know, the Redbirds have a pretty serious pitching injury down there. Daniel Ponce de Leon takes a line drive off the head. Just got out of the hospital, I think, this past weekend. Maybe had a skull fracture. Had to have surgery on his brain to relieve the pressure, and so they are thin on pitching at Memphis right now. And so I believe there is probably hesitation from the Cardinals to start calling up pitchers off the Memphis staff and leaving them short. For example, you know, that's why you saw, I think at least why you saw, a guy like Brebbia get the recall as opposed to John Gant, who was already on the 40-man, who has experience in a major league bullpen. Now, the other side of that, which I don't know, is where Memphis was at in the rotation and when Gant last pitched, right? Maybe he wasn't going to be available for the weekend, and so Brebbia was a guy who you could have on a short term. That's very possible. But yeah, I think that there maybe is a little bit of hesitation to dip into that. But the other thing with a guy like Marco Gonzalez that's important to remember is that, you know, you're going to end up burning another option year on Gonzalez, and this is his last option year. And so at some point, you have to figure out whether or not Marco Gonzalez can help you. I think you'll see him up with the ball club for sure this season. I think you probably will even see him start I would guess maybe even the next couple of weeks, because the Cardinals are in the middle of that 48 games in 49 days or whatever the hell it is. I think you'll probably see Marco Gonzalez here probably relatively soon. But, I mean, yeah, there are so many moving pieces, but there are so few obvious answers for this team right now.
Yep, true.
All right, well, thanks, all right, man.
Guys,
I appreciate
it. Sounds good. Thank you.
Yep, thank you. Have a good one. Yeah, so there you go, Matt. You start talking Cardinals baseball.
Yeah.
People get fired
Cardinals
up.
Baseball.
Cardinals, tis the season, Matthew. There's plenty more NHL stuff we'll have for you after the break. If you've missed anything here in the first hour of Game Time AM here in 590 The Fan, we covered the first game of the Stanley Cup Finals, and then lots of Cardinals stuff breaking down here at the second half mm-hmm. of the first hour. Couple more Cardinals things I want to get to before we get here to the end of the hour. So the roster shuffle over the weekend, as we talked about, ends up Jose Martinez off the DL, Colton Wong on the DL, Paul DeJong makes his Major League debut and goes 2-for-4. Yesterday, hits a pinch hit home run in his first MLB plate appearance out in Colorado. So he is definitely impressed so far. Paul DeJong also has the pleasure of recording his first toot plan in the major leagues within 26 hours. And Matt, are you, when I say toot plan in the context
toot
of
plan?
Yes, TOOTBLAN.
Never heard of it.
Never heard of that?
No.
It is an acronym that stands for thrown out on the bases like a nincompoop.
Oh, cool.
And I believe, and I could be wrong about this, but I think Deadspin originally coined it to describe the base running tactics of a former Cardinal, at the time was a Cub, Ryan Terrio, aggressive base runner, but yes, indeed, occasionally over-aggressive, and used to be described as the ultimate toot plan, thrown out on the bases like a nincompoop. So
What a legacy.
So DeJong yesterday, and this was not his fault. This was not his decision, but the Cardinals are down, I think it was 3-0 in the seventh yesterday. DeJong's on second. There's a line drive, a scorcher, kind of a dipping line drive off the bat, Jose Martinez, that eats up the shortstop, Seager, and ends up in short left field. DeJong reads the play, and he's taken off. He hits third base, and there stands Chris Maloney just waving the windmill. And Paul DeJong is a rookie. It's his second game in the major leagues. He sees the base coach, and so he's going. The base coach says go, and he takes off, rounds the corner for home, and he's out by 15 feet. The ball was just nowhere.
A little bit misjudged, perhaps, on Maloney's
absolutely.
Part.
Absolutely. But this is now a thing that happens with Chris Maloney
right.
on a somewhat regular basis. I think that it is becoming fair to wonder, you know, what his performance at third base looks like. And I don't know how you measure the performance of a third base coach, right? How do you measure?
Maybe he was told just wave everybody home.
And that's
just do it.
Right. There are a lot of factors there that I don't know
right.
anything about.
Well, I mean,
but
a main factor could be they need to score runs. So.
Sure. No, right. And that I understand. But simultaneously, you're down multiple runs in the seventh inning. You know, DeJong leads off with
right.
a double. Then you have the single from Martinez. You have the opportunity to build a rally. And a quick way to kill a rally
okay.
is to
run
get gunned
to
the plate by
yep.
20. Right. And the Cardinals are experts at running out of rallies, and at some point, you know, the bad base running has to stop too. Like there are a number of parts of this team's bad play that just has to stop at some point.
I think it's asking a lot to expect it to stop. It's been this way for, we'll say, at least one plus a half a season, seasons.
I agree.
At least there's really no sign of it stopping.
And by the way, the Cardinals continue to carry 13 pitchers.
Yes, and then
for no reason, and they don't use them. Right, they don't use them. Lyons can barely get himself into a game. You only want to use Broxton if the situation is dire.
Lyons not
getting
into a game.
Reset.
He with his DL stint and coming back. I mean, he's still, you know, more or less in a lot of ways working himself back into, you know, game shape and, you know, getting his arm back ready.
I mean, I guess that's the case.
You can't just throw him out there a whole ton of innings right off the bat and expect him to succeed.
And okay, and that's fine, but then the Cardinals have a problem because Stephen Piscotty has been away from the team now for about 5 days.
No one knows why.
You know, look, personal situations happen in every industry,
of course.
Be it radio, be it professional baseball, whatever it is, things happen. So whatever, but at the same time, that means the Cardinals are functionally playing with a two-man bench right now, because you're not going to use Fryer unless you absolutely have to, and you don't have Piscotty. And so with only 12 players, that's four guys on your bench. Piscotty is technically one of them at this point, right, not with the team. Fryer, the backup catcher, not going to be used, and that leaves you with two guys on the bench, and that creates impossibility.
Who are those two guys? Greg Garcia.
For the most part, yeah.
And he launched a massive home run, didn't he?
He did. He had a 465-foot home run at Coors Field.
That's big.
That is a big dong for sure out of Greg Garcia. So it's Greg Garcia, and then who am I missing?
I guess.
Yeah, and now whichever outfielder is not starting. Mm-hmm. Oh, Lord.
Fam.
So you're gonna have Pham in left pretty permanently at this point. You'll have Fowler in center. You'll have either Martinez or Piscotty in right. I'm forgetting a Cardinal right now, Matt Davis. I'm going to the roster right now.
How dare you?
And
Jeff,
when I look at it, I'm gonna feel
this is Cardinal
very
country.
Dumb.
You're
I know.
Not allowed to forget.
I am honestly ashamed at myself.
I'm just trying
I'll
to distract
you,
from the fact
I'll
that I have
you.
No clue.
Oh well, and here's why. Because it's a spot that you wish on the roster was open. Johnny Peralta is the other bench guy. Johnny Peralta is the other guy on the bench. That is the guy that we are forgetting.
Sense now.
Maybe we want to forget.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
We don't want to remember.
Yeah. No. So I don't know.
Give me something positive, Jeff. Give me something positive.
Something positive. Paul DeJong has been fun to watch so far.
Okay.
First person in the 2015 Cardinals draft class to reach the major leagues had his fam at Busch Stadium yesterday.
That's a cool tidbit.
It is indeed. There is going to be clamoring to keep him on the team and to keep Colton Wong not on the team, I think.
I don't think that's reasonable. I think Colton Wong's played fairly well.
I agree.
He's been swinging the bat fairly well.
I agree, but I think that Colton Wong has now entered this black hole with a lot of Cardinals fans where they don't like him anymore.
That's just too bad.
I mean, I know, but you know,
like he's finally playing good, and people are still just like, oh no, I gave up on him last summer, so I'm done now.
But here's the thing: there are some Cardinals players who are pretty bad, who get excuses from the fan base for forever and forever.
Right.
See, for example, a guy like Bo Hart. We're talking years ago. Maybe Randall Grichuk is in that category at this point,
I'm glad you brought that up, because I was going to say if Colton Wong is having, you know, issues with the fan base giving up on him or whoever giving up on him, and they're not feeling the same way about Randall Grichuk, then there's a problem.
Yes.
Because Randall Grichuk deserves to be there, maybe even more so than Colton Wong.
You know, there's an open question, I guess, why it is, and this is a whole bucket of worms, right? You get into the
I don't like worms, Jeff.
Right, you get
that's
into
why
the
I don't
whole
go fishing.
You get into the whole well, but you know about the exploding catfish. This is the whole thing with the B fibs and the Cardinal Nation and the whatnot. Is some guys get all the excuse in the world, and
right,
some guys don't. And why do some guys not, and why do some guys do? And
it's all about your blinders. You putting your blinders on.
It's if you're scrappy, and then the second word, you know,
I hate that.
What
word
is the but
scrappy?
White guys, you know, that is that
scrappy white
that
guys.
Is what you that is what you but I think if for a lot of people the second word there is the important one. I don't necessarily agree with that, because for example, people hated Colby Rasmus. People really hated
Colby Rasmus. I thought Colby was fine.
But
I thought his dad was quite a character.
Look, if you can get the Cardinal fan base at the time to side with Tony La Russa over you, you are not well liked by the fan base. I don't know. I think people were ready for Colby to go by the time it was his time to go. And I do see some similarities between Colby and Colton Wong. I don't, you know, I think that they are probably relatively of similar skill set at their plate. You know, Rasmus was more hyped as a prospect for sure. He was going to be the savior for a number of years.
The next Jim Edmonds
he was indeed. And you know, I think it's a fair comparison to judge sort of their spots in the organization and the way that fans react to those two players individually.
Right, but the difference is Colton Wong is, like I said, he's playing well right now. He doesn't have, you know, his father or somebody else in his family
right,
creating a distraction and being out there in the media saying things.
Right.
So I get it, but I think it's a little bit different situation.
I do think, too, we might be looking at a fairly serious injury with Colton Wong,
okay,
the way you hear that described. I think it was our buddy the Cat had tweeted that Colton felt that elbow pop a couple of times over the weekend. Anytime you hear about elbow and pop and right in the same sentence.
These now, aren't supposed to pop, so when they pop, something's gone wrong.
Now, it's his non-throwing elbow, so okay, how does that
so is it going to affect him more for his swing, I guess, perhaps?
I would think it's his back elbow, it's his left elbow, right. So for a left-handed batter, it's the back elbow, so okay. There is obviously a lot of power that comes out of that part of the swing.
Right.
I guess we wait and see. I know we had an MRI over the weekend, and they were still waiting on results. The fact that they had the MRI, and now 2 days later, we're still waiting on results, gives me, again, some pause. It's a holiday.
It was a long weekend.
It's a holiday weekend. It's very possible that actually the person who reads the MRI was out on vacation this weekend. Mm-hmm. Like, real life is a thing, for sure. So we wait and see. I think you can probably expect maybe to hear more about Colton Wong today from the Cardinals, but I don't know. There are moving pieces, Matt Davis, and I'm not at all confident that they're moving in the right direction. But
yeah, I don't see how you could be confident that they are. I mean, honestly, you can be overly optimistic, I guess,
right.
And kind of wish in one hand kind of scenario, but you're going to end up disappointed, I think.
You wish in one hand, you crap in the other, and you see which one fills up first?
Yeah, you know, you doing that second part for me. Thank you.
I'm there for you.
That's what it is, and I felt the same way last season, and they didn't make the playoffs last season, and this season is a continuation of last season
in
a lot of ways.
Nothing has gotten different.
You know, they signed a couple guys that were supposed to be a fix-all, and no, they had more need than what they actually went after. You know, Brett Cecil, I think that is a perfect example of, making a bigger need out of something than you needed to, going out and signing the only name available because, now we got a lefty reliever, our bullpen's fixed. There was more to your deficiencies than just that.
You're in a situation where Tyler Lyons gets out left-handed batters. You have him available. He's on the roster. Is Tyler Lyons $30 million worse than Brett Cecil? I got a hard time with that one. But he's here, so we'll make the best of it. This has been the first hour of Game Time AM here in 590 The Fan, KFNS, 105.7 HD2 at InsideSTL.com. Come on back in the second hour. We got lots of stuff from the Gary Bettman press conference to still break down. We got a little bit of blue stuff going on. We got a little bit of, I don't know, whatever the hell's going on. Sun is all the way up. Good morning, St. Louis.